Because that's the bottom line.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Monday, October 28th edition of the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. On today's show, our college basketball preview spectacular with Chris Dortch, the editor and publisher of the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook, now in its 39th year of publication. The Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook is easily the most respected preseason college basketball publication there is out there, and I highly recommend it. You can find Chris's material at blueribbonyearbook.com. So if you're a college basketball fan and the season starts very soon, this is the show for you. Enjoy! With us today, a man who needs no introduction anywhere in the college basketball world. He is the editor and publisher of the 39th edition, has it really been 39 years, of the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook. And you can find more information on that at blueribbonyearbook.com. And you can follow him on Twitter at cdortch. That's D-O-R-T-C-H. It's Chris Dortch joining us today on The Bottom Line. Chris, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, I'm glad to do it, man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. 399 pages in this bad boy. Anybody who's picking games every night in the desert, or Marge from accounting who's just filling out her $2 bracket in March, everybody can get some information from this thing. Do you face any challenges getting a huge yearbook like this out, especially like with recruiting and things like that?
Oh, man. Every year the challenge is greater. More recently, our challenge has been with the advent of the graduate transfer rule. You know, a decade ago when they started it, guys would actually transfer to get a postgraduate degree, and they weren't much of a factor on the court. And now, I don't think the NCAA anticipated this, but now it's, you know, it's almost like free agency. And teams are signing guys in August, September. You've always got to be on the alert. Recruiting never stops. And then the other challenge that's come within the last 5 years is power conferences not getting their league schedule complete, so their schools can't release their schedules. I mean, it wasn't 5 years ago where we prided ourselves on tracking down every schedule for every team in the country, and we just haven't been able to do that. Like 2 years ago, Pac-12 didn't release their league schedule, so we had to go without it. This year, we rejoiced when the Pac-12 announced in time for us, but then the Big 12 didn't. So, you know, it's just a different way of life. I mean, leagues having their own networks changes the dynamics of things. And so, yeah, it's a little tougher, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ago. But that's all part of it. And I actually love that kind of stuff anyway. You know, there's a website called Verbal Commits. I highly recommend to anybody. They do a great job of kind of tracking down recruits and transfers and stuff. And my buddy Jeff Goodman, who now writes for Stadium, has a transfer list that he keeps updated. He's pretty well known for that. And so we look around and we try to get everything we can, but sometimes you miss them. You can't get them all. And I can't imagine what it would be like putting out a pro baseball annual. They have to put them together before spring training's even done. And of course, you know that there's trades and stuff. And it would kill me to have a book that's not conclusive, inclusive. And you know, we miss a few, but we get a lot more than we miss.
Well, I can tell you from firsthand experience, you don't miss much. Every year, it's about 400 pages. And from personal experience, here's a quick story for you. I used to get the mid-season update you had. I used to get the tournament edition that you had. And the worst mistake I ever made in my life, literally, was 20 years ago when I got the tournament edition. And it was FedExed on a Monday right after Selection Sunday. And in the very back, you had your predictions for the tournament. And it was the year Michigan State defeated Florida in the final. And you had Florida, who was a 5 seed that year. You actually had Florida making the final game. And I was living in Atlanta at the time, and I just remember I just watched the SEC tournament here in the Georgia Dome. Florida didn't even make it past Friday night. How could you pick this team to make the final game? Lo and behold, as that tournament went on, I was like, why didn't I just copy my bracket from the Blue Ribbon Tournament Edition? Why was I buying this in the first place?
That tournament edition was cool. Joe Lunardi and I, Mr. Bracketology, literally invented it on a car ride to Knoxville. He had he lives in Philadelphia, and
right.
he came to Chattanooga where I live to visit me, and we were going to go see, actually, Tennessee and Florida. So on the way there, we were kicking around the concept of this tournament edition that we wanted to do, and Bracketology sprung from that because we wanted to predict what teams we thought were going to make it so we could write those. If we had to write everything on Selection Sunday, you couldn't do it.
Right.
So we would try to pick the obvious teams. And then as Joe got to digging, the not-so-obvious teams, and he was incredibly accurate with it. And but that thing was, it was insane. I mean, we didn't sleep. We stayed up all night, and we'd get the thing out, and there was just no margin for error. If one of us got the flu or whatever, you know, we'd be doomed. But the real thing that hurt that was just the advent of the internet.
Right.
We just the sales kind of diminished as people could get free stuff on the internet. We get that, and I'd do the same thing. But that's the difference between those specialty editions and our main edition. Nobody, to my knowledge, so far has been crazy enough to try to imitate this thing. As you said, it's 400 pages, 650,000 words. It's a handful. It's every D1 team, and it's tough to track down some of them, but, you know, I could probably count on one hand the coaches that didn't speak with us this year, or our writers. And what's funny about that is that most of the coaches or their assistants buy our book to scout, you know,
right.
Yet the coaches are pretty, you know, forthcoming with us and talking about their team's strengths and weaknesses. But they know, they likely know that the book and things they say will be used to scout against them. But the trade is they get 29 other scouts. You know, they'll get to use Blue Ribbon for that. So really, we kind of affect the season from start to finish, which is a testament to the job that our writers do and the copy we produce, because not only, you know, do coaches use it to scout, especially early season games, but the NCAA selection committee buys the book, passes it out to all their members, and as you know, if you're on the selection committee, you're allotted a certain number of conferences that you've got to keep an eye on. So the NCAA buys them, and they use Blue Ribbon as a tool to keep track of the schools that are going to be in the tournament. So literally from start to finish, I don't know, you know, this is going to sound, I don't know, maybe arrogant, but I don't know of a publication anywhere that kind of affects the game as much as this one does. I mean, NBA scouts use it. Radio announcers from about every school, and ESPN, CBS, anybody that Fox. So it's pervasive, you know, in college basketball. I mean, it's we're still sort of a cult thing, I guess, in the sport world as a whole. But it's cool. It's been fun doing it. I'm a hoop head myself. I was fortunate enough to go to a mid-major school where the coach kind of, I wrote for the school paper, and the coach took me under his wing and kind of really showed me the game from a coach's perspective and how things went and how they were. And it just made me really want to do it for a living and cover college basketball. So I'm indebted to that coach. It's actually Sonny Smith of Auburn. If it weren't for him, I might, God forbid, be a PR guy right now.
Oh, heaven forbid that. But you make a good point, and we talk about this in the summertime with Phil Steele. A lot of these AP preseason polls, a lot of these conference media days, they just look at the Phil Steele magazine, just like they look at your magazine. Go compare the AP basketball preseason poll to your magazine. The top seven are exactly the same. Five of the seven are in the same spot. So when you say you have a lot of influence, yes, Blue Ribbon still does have a lot of influence on college basketball.
Yeah, it's cool that I think that people trust us. You know, that's a big word for me, is trust and accuracy, and making sure that the stories that we run are as good as they can be. And, you know, just talking to the coaches, most of them are really cool about getting back with us. Some of them we sort of have to track down. They're busier and busier now with the way the recruiting season is kind of been bisected, and it's not just in July anymore. And, you know, they're out on certain weekends and home on certain weekends. So it's not easy to get a hold of everybody, but we do it. And they you know, I wrote 26 pieces for the book this year, the most I've written in many years. And every coach I talked to, and I talked to all 26, it was a great conversation. They're familiar with the book, they're familiar with me, and we just talk ball, you know, and if you can just talk ball, and that's what our readers like, is the fact that, you know, it's just pure hoop heads, you know. Produced by junkies for junkies.
Well, that's what we've got here at Lexington, Kentucky. One more thing I noticed in your yearbook this year, you've changed over from the RPI ratings that basically aren't used anymore, and you went to Ken Pomeroy ratings. Somebody like me rejoices. I've been a subscriber to Ken Pom for so long that my login is literally an AOL email address. That's how long I've been at this. What was the crust, I guess, for you changing to Ken Pom ratings?
Well, that's a good question. We used to have RPI for many years,
right.
And once the NCAA stopped using it, we just decided that we needed another metric. You know, we didn't want to use the net because I don't know that there's anybody that can really approximate that formula outside of the NCAA. And, you know, that's proprietary information, so I doubt they were going to share that with me. So I needed to find a new metric. So I just went to the best there was. Ken Pom, you know, not a lot of people know this, but he's a meteorologist by trade.
Yes.
And the same thing that attracted him to meteorology is the same thing that attracts him to what he does now, is sort of being a predictor of things to come. And not only do we use his ratings, his team ratings, but he's given us carte blanche to use all of his stats. And I got to admit, 5 years ago, I was still probably an old dog that didn't think he needed any new tricks.
Right.
And, you know, I started teaching a college sports writing class, and, you know, being around young people, you know, it can kind of get you jazzed up and open your eyes to some things. And plus, I wanted to practice what I preached. I always tell my students, you've really got to be mindful of every tool that can help you. And once I started digging around into Ken Pom stuff, I realized that there were some statistics that, although I didn't necessarily understand them at first, I knew I had to understand them. And, you know, rebound percentage, block percentage, stuff like that that you would have never thought about. But it's really a good indicator of, you know, let's say a team, you know, rebound margin doesn't mean anything. That's the old stat. But rebound percentage does,
mm-hmm.
Offensive rebound percentage. You know, you can see at a glance what a team's characteristics are. And it's funny how those characteristics hold true year after year, despite, you know, the coach has been there a while, and, you know, he continues to use the things that got him there. If you look at Bruce Pearl and Auburn, last year they led the nation in number of threes jacked up. So you look in Ken Pom stats, and they're all over that. And, you know, there's a fingerprint there. You see how they do what they do. And when it comes to an analyst like myself, or somebody that does it for a living on television or radio like you do, those stats are invaluable.
Yeah, you could just look at the Ken Pom ratings immediately. You could tell, okay, this team is an offensive-oriented team. This team's a defensive-oriented team. And like you said, a team like Virginia, you know, every
tempo.
Year. Tempo is the key stat, I think, and pace of play. That's the key stat that Ken Pom could give you. So you can figure out, like a team like Virginia, it doesn't matter who the roster is. You know the style of play you're going to get every time you face them.
Well, that's true. And then he throws some other goodies at you that I don't think a lot of people know about. I've seen some writers mention them, but he's got a luck metric.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I'm not even sure what all goes into that, but just to give you an example, a couple of years ago at Ole Miss, when Andy Kennedy resigned at midseason, they lost three home games. I mean, these were good teams, NCAA resume building teams. They lost three overtime home games in the space of a couple of weeks, and that just derailed the season, you know? So if you look at Pomeroy's luck metric, you see, you know, 1 point losses. I think he factors injuries into it. It's pretty clever. And then he's got, you know, the youngest team in the country, the smallest right. team in the country, the tallest team in the country. It's just, I mean, you could really go bonkers in there. And when I asked him, you know, he had been a fan of us and we of him for many years. We were friendly and communicated back and forth. But when I asked him, I was a little, I don't know, I wouldn't say nervous, but a little hesitant because I thought, you know, this guy's in demand. He's writing for the Athletic. He's got his own thing going on. You know, will he have time for us? And he was enthusiastic about it. I emailed him the other day, told him the book was on the way, and he said he just couldn't wait. You know, he loves what we do. We love what he does. And it was just a match, you know, made in hoop heaven.
Well, it's just like the movie Moneyball, no pun intended, Moneyball, adapt or die. That's a famous line from Billy Bean, Brad Pitt in that movie, adapt.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what Blue Ribbon has done by going with the Ken Pomeroy ratings, a great addition. But let's talk some basketball, Chris. We're here at Lexington, Kentucky, so of course it's Big Blue Madness all year round. You've got them ranked number 2 in the preseason. But let's talk about John Calipari for a minute. We could go negative and positive on him. Of course, the positive. National championship, 4 Final Fours. 8 years they've either won the regular season or the conference tournament in the SEC and a ton of lottery picks. But the negative, something we tend to harp on a little bit too much, some people say. 8 out of those 10 years, Calipari has underachieved based on his preseason AP poll, and he hasn't lived up to expectations since 2012. 7 out of his 8 tournament losses came when UK was favored, and the last time they won a game in the Elite Eight or later was 2015. So, some people love Cal. Some people say he hasn't lived up to expectations. Your thoughts, Chris Dortch?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, I think he's a good coach, and I think that, again, you look at stats, you can see effort stats that come true year after year, you know, rebounding, defensive field goal percentage, stuff like that. But the way he's tried to do it, I think it might have been revolutionary 10 years ago when he started.
Right.
And now Duke has jumped up there and tried to do it, and not just tried. Last year had the top 3 recruits in the 2018 class, including Zion Williams. So, you know, those two can get away with it. They can do it. But how many titles have they won in the last, since 2012? 2.
Right, exactly. And you bring up a great point. Last year, look at the Final Four teams. Virginia, Texas Tech, Michigan State.
Old.
And slow yeah. pace of play.
I mean, if you look at Villanova, okay, won two of the last 3 or
right.
4. Old. I mean, he gets guys to buy into redshirting. And, you know, they'll get a transfer. So I think that, and even Virginia, I mean, they lost some guys early entry into the draft. But, you know, gosh, just think if they came back.
Right.
They'd have been preseason number 1 because they would have had a senior-dominated lineup. There's a couple of different ways to skin a cat in this game. Like I said, you know, Bruce Pearl's teams fire up a bunch of 3s. There are other coaches who are loathe to shoot too many 3s. Some coaches, you know, Rick Byrd, when he was at Belmont, he either wanted a layup or a 3. He didn't want mid-range. And I remember having a great conversation with him about the mid-range. And he kind of talked me out of it. You know, he said it was a contested shot in the lane, usually over a, you know, a 6'10 guy. And then last year, I saw Tennessee start dominating with little curls and screens and Grant Williams and others knocking down 15-footers, and that's the way their offense started. And they hammered people. They won 20 games in a row. So there's different ways to skin a cat. Cal, he goes after the best players in the country because he can. He's at Kentucky. You would be stupid not to recruit the way Cal does. But there's a downside to that because you're going to have young guys. You're going to have a bunch of guys that were stars everywhere they've been. And it takes a little while, usually till February, even March, to where guys gel and come together. And, you know, invariably they do that. But then you get in a tournament, and that's where you fall victim. And it's really what we all love about the tournament. You could see a mid-major team that has a senior-dominated lineup, you know, like Loyola of Chicago a couple of years ago, just kind of cruise through the brackets. And so Yeah, it's a long answer to your short question, but I think he's a good coach. But I think that Villanova has opened some eyes to a different way of doing things. And then even Texas Tech last year and again this year, inserting two graduate transfers. North Carolina has done that this year. And they're from, you know, William and Mary and Charleston Southern, I think. So kind of a gamble, but, you know, all in an effort to try to stay experienced and stay old. And, you know, Rick Barnes at Tennessee, they were top five in the nation last year and should have been in the Elite Eight, and they didn't have a top 100 player.
Right.
So
it's no coincidence that of your All-American team, four of them are seniors and one of them is a junior. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, so a lot of the publications will put freshmen in there, and I'll admit I underplayed Zion Williamson last year, but I mean, really, who knows? I mean, the guy's awesome, but until you turn the lights on, you really don't know. And so, yeah, we tend to pick seniors, senior-dominated teams. You know, the reason we went with Kentucky number two, they've just got such a deep roster. And then when you talk about the two point guards coming back as sophomores, they've been through the wars and the two bigs. So they've really got, I think, you know, probably the most experienced, say veteran, but they're still just sophomores, nucleus that he's had since he's been there.
You mentioned the point guards, though. Ashton Hagans, who's gotten a lot of buzz. He's first-team All-SEC.
Yep.
You've got him on your third-team All-American, SEC co-defensive player in the year. But if I look at his numbers last year, Chris, he was eighth on the team in player efficiency rating, and he only shot 27% from three-point land, and they ran Quad A Green out of town for this guy, basically. Am I supposed to expect Ashton Hagans, great on the defensive end, but let's just face it, and I know you saw that Kentucky-Auburn game in the tournament last year, they were daring him to shoot the basketball in that game.
Oh, you would drag out Ken Pomeroy on me, wouldn't you?
That's the whole point of this whole show, isn't it?
It's a great point that you make, and I think, you know, he was a guy that graduated from high school early. He reclassified, and I think for the first couple of months he was like a deer in the headlights, and then he started to get it. I think that he spent the off season working on the things that he needed to do to really become elite. And quickly, I mean, Coach said this, gosh, in the fall, I mean, when they first came back. Well, of course, they practice in the summer, then they give them a couple of weeks off, then they come back in the fall. And I think Cal did a little press conference, and he said, quickly, it's not the same guy.
Right.
You don't recognize him. I mean, so.
But are you following
what does that mean,
Chris? Because he goes, he's a new player. He's a changed person. Are you going to believe that coach speak, or are you going to believe numbers on a paper? I guess that's what we have to ask ourselves.
Well, the thing that you got to remember is that the numbers on the paper were last. And now training has gotten so sophisticated. I can tell you this with absolute certainty because I do a column for NBA.com. And it has nothing to do with the NBA except for the draft. And what I do is profile players that can be drafted. And a lot of times I don't pick the obvious. Like I don't pick Zion Williamson, but I might pick somebody who might be taken by the Warriors, you know, with the last pick in the first round. And generally what you find there is that work ethic is a big key. And then with tools like Synergy, I mean, you could watch every play from everybody in the college game. Just the other day, I was on the phone with Duke's video coordinator. He needed a favor, and I was happy to do it. Duke's been a big supporter of our book. But, you know, you've got guys that their only job is to provide what they call cut-ups. You know, so Ashton Hagans is going to get cut-ups of his good and his bad play. And they say, okay, I don't know what particular mechanical problem he had that made him shoot at such a low percentage from three, but you can guarantee they do, and he does now. And you know, every school in the SEC's got these awesome film rooms. You can go in with a pass key any time of day or night. Everybody's got practice facilities. Again, 24/7 access. So if you've got a work ethic, and I think those two kids do, I don't look at last year's stats necessarily. And the other thing, too, is confidence. And I was telling my sports writing class the other day, a golf pro who I know. He's a club pro, but he's played in the U.S. Open a couple times, the PGA, and he once told me that choking was nothing more than not having confidence in your technique. So confidence to me is a huge, huge word, an important word in any sport, but particularly basketball, where your confidence can be shot if you don't see that thing go in the hole. It can affect your whole game, you know, especially on the defensive end, because if you're not scoring, you're just not putting out the effort. So when he says that these guys have developed confidence and they're different people from a confidence standpoint, then I'm going to pay attention to that. And I'm going to say, yeah, Ken Pom, you had great stats last year. They were vital as I wrote this preview, but they're probably not going to be relevant if a kid has spent his summer like, you know, anybody in the SEC would. They've got all these facilities and, like I said, video equipment. It's just so sophisticated now.
Speaking of Ken Pom, his preseason ratings have Kentucky, the number one defensive team in America. Like you were talking about Belmont and how they used to play. Does Kentucky have enough perimeter shooting in today's game to survive in a tournament format when you don't know if they'll be able to hit enough shots to win these games?
You know, that's always the question with Cal coach teams. For whatever reason, I mean, they've had good shooters, but they just haven't loaded up on them. I think he likes athletes and length. And somebody like Bruce Pearl, he doesn't really care about length. I mean, his guards were short, but they could jack it up. And they took a ton of threes. And mm-hmm. It's just all about philosophy, you know. I thought, you know, when Virginia became the first number one seed to lose, that's understandable because they play the pack line. Pack line is designed to keep you out of the lane. So if you come across a team, and usually mid-majors, every team has good guards. So usually a mid-major that's got a chance to score an upset is a good jump shooting team. So if Virginia holds fast to that pack line and they don't adjust, and this team's on a roll from three, you're going to be upset. And that's the thing with Kentucky. I mean, if you've got the ability, let's say 1 through 4, to make threes. If you're 1 through 4 man on the floor can make three, I think you've got a real chance in tournament play, because not only can you build up big leads, you can cut into big leads in a hurry. I'll never forget watching Nevada. They didn't have great-looking shooters, but, boy, they came 14 down in the second half to beat Texas, and then 2 days later, 22 down in the second half to beat Cincinnati. And, you know, you can turn games around. And so that's a perennial question with Kentucky is, do they have those three-point gunners that can, you know, make a difference?
Let's look at the SEC for a second. Is it Kentucky versus the world, or is Florida up in that conversation with Kentucky based on the fact that they now have Kerry Blackshear?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, Kerry Blackshear came down to the SEC, and it was going to be Kentucky, Florida, Tennessee, or probably Texas A&M because Buzz Williams went there.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever got him, unless it was Kentucky, which I still think has an overwhelming amount of talent, but whoever got him was going to be a team that, if it was Florida, maybe not Texas A&M, if it was Tennessee, they were going to have a chance to win the league. And so I think Florida, and along with its young nucleus, don't forget those guys as mm-hmm. freshmen, the perimeter players last year that were so good for them, they're all back. He's got his deepest lineup ever. They're making layups again. 2 years ago, I remember talking to him in Knoxville after a game, and he said, we just can't make layups. You know, they're defending at the level he wants them to, and Blackshear's just an unusual dude. I mean, he's a guy you can run offense through, so they're going to be good. I think Auburn is not going anywhere. Georgia is going to surprise people because of the depth they've got. They'll be young, but they can score, and it's a little more like the team Tom Crean wants to run, that kind of offense he wants. He wants to run it, but if they're in the half court, and he hired Joe Scott, a former Princeton coach, they're going to run a little offense with Princeton principles, and you know they're going to invert it, and their big men are going to shoot it, and guards are going to post and cut. It's going to be pretty – I mean, they've got the personnel to run it. And then I think Tennessee. I rank Tennessee in our preseason top 25. I think if you've got good guards, you've got a chance. And their two senior guards, one was on the Cousy Award watch list, and the other one was on the Jerry West Award watch list. So that means they're two of the top 20 at their position in the country.
Of the SEC, you have four ranked teams: Kentucky, Florida, Auburn, Tennessee. Any of those other teams, maybe you just mentioned a couple, that you can see making the tournament this year?
Yeah, I think I like Ole Miss's talent. I think they're long and athletic, and then they got a JUCO big man who's going to make all the difference for them. They were really weak in the middle last year, and they're not going to be that now. He's a rim protector and a guy that can shoot 60% from the floor, which is what they needed. I think Georgia, again, is another team that has a chance. They're going to be young, but they have a chance to be really good. And I think the way Tom Crean wants to play, it's going to suit the personnel that he's got. And so, yeah, there'll be some surprises. I think Mississippi State, when they got Perry back, that gave them a chance to compete again for a spot. And South Carolina, you can't fall asleep on them because they don't have guys that, you know, I don't think they're in Rivals' top 30 recruiting classes, but he's got some good, solid guys that want to play hard and want to be coached hard. And so they're a team that I would look out for as well.
You've been in SEC country for a long time. Does the SEC get a bad rap for being a football conference, especially among the Power Fives? Because they're annually either fourth or fifth among the Power Five conferences in basketball.
I think it used to. I think that, you know, everybody talks about an East Coast bias or an ESPN bias, if you're not one of Dick Vitale's Paisan buddies. But the league made a concerted effort, and it should have, because it was good in everything, constantly contending for championships. And I say that, they won three championships in a seven-year span at one point, including two in a row by Florida. So it wasn't like they were dogging it. But when it came time to number of teams in the tournament or how far the teams advanced, they weren't cutting it. So one of the first things they did was finally hire an associate commissioner whose only charge was basketball. I mean, to me, that's a no-brainer. They've got a really good one now. And one of the other things they did, they made an edict that you could not schedule any team that averaged more than 175 for a three-year span in the RPI. Well, you know, they stopped playing the directional schools and stopped playing SWAC schools and Southland schools, and nothing against those leagues. I like watching mid-major ball, but they started scheduling up.
You bring up schedule, and that's been a big point of contrition here in Big Blue Nation for a couple years now. Yeah, Kentucky starts out. Last year they played Duke. This year they played Michigan State. But last year they played seven home games against non-Power Fives, which they'll be double-digit favorites. They do the same thing again this year.
Yeah.
Home fans here in Lexington are like, well, we don't get any good games here in Lexington. They're all these neutral court, off-site, big market games. Is the scheduling thing an issue because it's a big scheduling thing here in Lexington? Looking at that UK home schedule.
Yeah, I mean, by and large, you know, he's got to take those games, and they're always going to be offered. You notice they don't go to Maui and stuff like that. They don't go in any of those kind of holiday tournaments that often. But there's always a marquee game for him. You know, he's an East Coast guy, so if there's a chance to play, you know, at the Garden, he's going to take it. They're locked into the Champions Classic. Got to take that. And, you know, he's always going to have a rivalry game with somebody like a North Carolina. And then there's Louisville always, and they're not going anywhere now that Chris Mack is there. So, yeah, I mean, I guess you could knock him a little bit, but there's a method to that madness. The way I see it is that he's always going to be young, and he knows it, and he wants his team to sort of work its way into the league. And as I said, they usually get it together in February and March. But the knock, I mean, everybody, I mean, if you're a Kentucky fan, you should, and probably rightly so, expect to win the national championship. It just doesn't happen every year. It's tough. Like we said earlier, I think age is a factor now, the older you are. But, you know, that's a good point you make about their home games, and I think it's a reason that a lot of Kentucky fans travel well. If you look for wherever they go, there's always a ton of Kentucky fans, and a lot of them save their vacation for the SEC tournament.
Oh, yes.
And the NCAAs. So, yeah, I'd do that if I were them, too. You can't get a season ticket in RUP anyway, so why not just follow them on the road?
Now you can get season tickets at RUP. You can now, absolutely. One SEC team you didn't mention, LSU. How is Will Wade still the coach? How is Sean Miller still the coach at Arizona? What do we make of this basketball corruption trial?
Wow, you know, that's a good question. I really dreaded having to have a conversation with Will, who's a friend of mine. I was disappointed, obviously, as anybody who knew him was when those revelations came out, because he's a sharp guy. He's a sharp guy. He's a hard worker. He's connected. If what is indicated on those tapes are true, I mean, I don't think he's a guy that has to resort to stuff like that. So, yeah, the only thing I can imagine is that, the FBI did all this, but then the NCAA has to come in and do their thing. And from what I've heard, they were down in LSU and really couldn't get anything definitive, you know, and snippets of a conversation, although they sound incriminating, you know, could be, I don't know, have an entirely different meaning. So that's the thing. I mean, the NCAA is really understaffed, and I think its rule book lends itself to cheating because there are so many things that are against the rules. So it's tough. But, yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, when you hear somebody on tape, I don't know, that's a very good question.
Out. Yeah, exactly. Hey, the three-point shot's going to be moved back this year. How does that affect the game in your mind?
Well, I think what it'll do is you look at this. Most good shooters never cared what the line was anyway.
Right.
They never looked at it because they just knew that I have a high degree of comfort to take this shot if it's behind the line. You know, if it's a foot farther than that, who cares? I'm a good shooter and I know it. So those guys are always going to have the green light. And what it may do is it may prevent some other guys. Coaches may take of that privilege away from some marginal shooters. And no matter, I mean, every time it's been moved back, percentage dips for a year, and then it starts to climb back up. So why is that? Well, guys are practicing it. They're getting stronger. They're working on their lower body, which really is the key to distance shooting, in my opinion. And they just figure out how to get it in the hole. And coaches figure out how to get better shots and better looks. So I think it'll do is the shooters are going to shoot, and the guys that really were marginal, they'll probably, hey, why don't you post up?
You got a couple of non-traditional Power Fives in your top 25. Utah State and Davidson. The AP was with you on Utah State. They were not with Davidson. I noticed, especially on Selection Sunday, the NCAA tends to kind of give these schools kind of the shaft, for lack of a better term. Sometimes facing them off against each other. Sometimes giving them a very tough road. Talked about Belmont. I know it seemed like for years, a few years ago, when they were really rolling. They seem to get the shaft every year, matchup-wise.
Always.
Yes. Do you think the NCAA still has it out for these teams like the Utah States and Davidsons of the world?
Well, I think that they've got to realize that people watch the tournament because of the chance of upsets.
They watch them early, though. If these Cinderellas make it late, they don't want to watch George Mason in the Final Four.
They don't want that. And I had a conversation with Jay Billis once, who's a friend, and he was kind of advocating for things that might one day push college basketball into like a Division I and one AA, you know, type situation. And I said, you know, won't that take a little bit from the tournament? And, you know, we won't get to see these upsets. And he said, Chris, are you telling me that you won't watch an all-power conference NCAA tournament? And I said, well, you got me there. I would watch it.
Exactly.
But, I don't know. I think Joe Lenardi, obviously I've known him for a long time, and we've talked about this at length over the years. He can show you chapter and verse a good mid-major getting in, outperforming the sixth team from the Big Ten or whatever power conference league that had a sub-500 record in their league. Almost always the mid-major outperforms that marginal power conference team. So, you know, you just wish that selection committee would, hey, give Joe a call, you know. He'll show you his numbers. He'd be happy to.
Yeah, he should be on the committee anyway. I mean, you know, guys.
Dude, he could be the committee.
Absolutely.
He could be the committee. He's a nut.
I honestly think the committee intentionally messes one team up a year just so he won't get them all right. Because I think he gets like 67 out of 68 pretty much.
They don't want him to be a smart aleck.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
They don't want him getting cocky. You know, he's already cocky enough because he was in a Verizon commercial and he faced off against the president in a bracket contest. But he deserves it. He's good. But yeah, I mean, I wish that the NCAA would give him a call and say, hey, Joe, Chris told me that you've got some pretty compelling stats here in favor of mid-majors outperforming these sixth and seventh teams from a power conference. And
right.
Joe will say, funny you should ask.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And then he'd pull out all the proof. You know?
Yeah, we have a lot of conspiracy theories on this show. One of them is that they won't let Joe Lunardi get 68 out of 68 right. And yeah,
not going to happen.
Right, exactly.
And you know, of course, there's always the conspiracy of how they bracket, and you know,
there's plenty of conspiracies on that.
Coach
yes.
versus disciple, and
teams that
hate each other.
Wait, you think you don't think it's a computer just spitting out matchups? You think it's actually a smoke-filled room with old athletic directors with agendas? You think that's how it is?
Well, they've grown with the times.
Okay.
They've got all kinds of metrics and stats and stuff, but I've had several friends on the committee over the years. And when it comes down to nutcracking time, the question that's asked around the room is, who would you least like to play? And that's really what ends up deciding who gets in and who doesn't. Who would you least like to play? So basically, it is a smoke-filled room with these old codgers
exactly.
who have been through the
I
wars.
Knew we were right.
You know?
Thank you, Chris Dortch, for telling us we were right about that. Hey.
I mean, that's like the final determining factor, you know?
Do you like the cut of their jib? It's not exactly numbers on a paper. It's
yeah. If you were coaching right now, who would you least like to face in the first round? Who would you not be able to sleep over? And that's generally what does it. And sometimes they don't get it right. And I wish they would err more on the side of some of these mid-majors. But, you know, it gives you pause to think, are television ratings the factor? And
oh, it's
it
all
sure
about
makes
the money.
You think.
Yes.
Yeah, because, you know, don't forget, CBS has given up $1 billion with a B for
mm-hmm.
the rights, and they don't want George Mason playing VCU.
Exactly.
And,
why do you think?
You know, they don't want that.
Why do you think these networks can't draw flies for regular season games, but everybody wants to show the tournament because Marge from accounting's got her $2 office pool bracket, and she's got to see how her teams do? It's because we all love that tournament, and we all want to make a couple dollars at the end. That's basically what it is.
Yeah, I mean, and now, I mean, gosh almighty, the Supreme Court allows states to make their own mind up on.
Mm-hmm.
Whether to allow sports betting. And I've seen it factor in already. I had a lady who had I don't know what you would call our business, book service, I don't know what it was.
Yes, a tout service.
But it was in Henderson, Nevada.
Right.
But she's moved it to Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
and she bought 40 copies of my book. And so I got to looking, and I thought, this is odd, you know. And then I realized that, wow, you know, pretty soon Nevada's not going to be unique anymore.
It's not. It's already not unique. They're already competing with New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and they're already losing to states like New Jersey and Pennsylvania. But
exactly.
Yeah, we could talk about sports gambling on another show some other time. Speaking of gambling,
yep.
Chris Dortch, game number one. Number one, Michigan State versus number two, Kentucky. Who you got?
Wow. You know, I'm going to go with Michigan State. Simply because of what we've talked about the whole show, their experience, and I think that's a factor, but you never know. I mean, Tom Izzo is another guy who's not afraid to go play, and he doesn't honestly care. I mean, he would hate to lose that game, sure. The game doesn't matter to him.
Does the injury to Langford affect your opinion about them in any way?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's got length, he can score, he can defend. Yeah, that's not good.
But you've still got Michigan State over Kentucky, game number one.
I'd still go with that because they figured out a way without him last year.
Okay.
And I think they'll figure it out again.
Speaking of our friends out in the desert, Michigan State 7-1, Kentucky 8-1, Duke 9-1. You're national champion, and if you can, add in your Final Four along with it.
Wow, that's a really good question. I think this year we're going to see a surprise from somewhere, but I'm really not sure where that might come from. I think Oregon, as they often do, loaded up in the summer. because they're on the quarter system and they can keep recruiting into September.
Right. Is there a better tournament coach than Dana Altman? He is so good at the tournament time. He's really good.
Yeah, I'd watch out for them. I really like Davidson as a sleeper, not necessarily a Final Four team. But, you know, there's always going to be like a Texas Tech or somebody that just rises up. And that's what I like about the tournament. I think Maryland's a team that you need to watch out for. I think with Blackshear, Florida's a team you need to watch out for. And then lower down, you know, any team with good guards is a threat. You know, Purdue proved that last year. Tennessee has good guards. So maybe it's time for them to make a run. I don't know. VCU, good guards. So it's going to be interesting. Colorado is a team that we picked to win the Pac-12. I think a lot of people can't see past Arizona in that league and are maybe undervaluing Colorado a little bit, but not me. I've been friends with Tad Boyle for years, and he does things the right way. He redshirts guys. He has older teams. So there's another team to kind of watch out for.
You didn't give us a national champion, Chris Dorch.
I still got to do that, don't I?
Yeah, you
I'm
do.
Gonna go with
we
Michigan
hold you to
State.
The grindstone on this one.
I'm going to go with Michigan State.
Michigan State is Chris Dorch's of Blue Ribbon Yearbook. It's his pick to win the national champion. So let's bottom line this. You think Kentucky, you think Calipari has been a great coach, but maybe not lived up to expectations, especially in recent years?
Well, I'll say this. Kentucky fans are among the best and most knowledgeable and most fervent of any sport.
Fervent
anywhere.
Is a good word, yes, fervent.
Yeah.
That's a good, word.
But does fervent equate with reality?
Yes. Now you're speaking our language, yes.
Yeah. You guys must have a good show. I like the questions you're asking me.
Well, thank you, Chris. I appreciate it. I've had decades of experience reading your book to prepare for this, so that's okay.
Well, I appreciate that. I think that if you ask a Kentucky fan, they're going to say, well, we just won one. I bring you back to the Tubby Smith, okay? Mm-hmm. First radio show he's on, caller calls in and says, Coach, you'll have a good year if you win the SEC, beat Louisville, win the national championship. So at the end of the year, they've won the national championship. He didn't get all three.
Right.
Well, he said, well, Coach, you didn't get all three.
It's not good enough.
And,
I know.
And Tubby's like, I just won the national championship, man.
Right.
Welcome
to Big Blue Nation.
Exactly. And he knew, he was like, oh, my God. And so that's kind of the way it is. But I think Cal's a good coach. I think he recruits exceptionally because at Kentucky you have to and you can. And that's the kind of talent he's going to go for. It's actually harder to do it the way he does it. I talked to one of his assistants once, and he said the brilliance of the man is here we are in summer. We got a whole new cast of characters, and he's figuring out how we need to play for that particular year to have the best chance to win. So I think all things considered, he's a really good coach, but you're never going to please that fan base. And so by that metric, he's probably underperformed.
Let's continue our bottom line here. You tell Big Blue Nation they should believe in Higgins and Quickly, even though we bring out KenPom numbers that say maybe you shouldn't.
I do. I just think that, again, training has been become so sophisticated and so prevalent, and the NCAA finally got wise and let their coaches work with kids throughout the summer. And I think that's improved the caliber of the game, which, duh, you figured it would. And I think that if you've got kids that have a certain drive, and these two kids do, then, yeah, I think you can flush my boy Ken's stats and start afresh.
I'll tell him you said that.
I probably already told him.
Okay.
But yeah, I love those stats, and I'm a convert, full-blown convert. But
well, now in the summer, you can get better.
You can get better in the summer, and I'm banking on those two kids being much improved, and they're going to be a huge factor as Kentucky competes for a national championship.
Your bottom line in Kentucky, SEC champ, but Florida a lot closer to Kentucky than they are the rest of the field of the SEC.
No question. Kerry Blackshear,
ensured that. I think Florida was going to be a virtual lock to finish in the top three anyway without him and getting the NCAA, make a deep run. This guy's unique. We had a quote from Coach K in there who played against him in the ACC, and he said, you know, this cat's different. You know, he's unique. He's not your typical five-man. You can run offense through him. You can do a lot with him. He can shoot it from three. He can post. He can defend the rim. He's a difference maker for Florida.
Bottom line, you say Michigan State over Kentucky in first game of the season?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Michigan State. I picked him number one. I just got to ride with him, man.
And you picked Michigan State to win the national champion. Before you go, one more prediction. Kentucky's finish in the NCAA tournament this year.
You know, I think they'll get to the Final Four.
Okay, but they're going to lose in the Final Four.
I don't know. Yeah, I think they can get that far, yeah.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. The bottom line on college basketball this season from the great Chris Dortch. Of Blue Ribbon College Basketball. That's all the time we have for today with Chris Dortch of the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook. Chris, tell us where we can find you on social media and where we can buy your book.
Well, I'd be happy to. At C Dortch, D-O-R-T-C-H, is my Twitter, and BlueRibbonYearbook.com. We are selling the heck out of them, having a banner year. So get your order in now while they're still around.
Well, I've got one in my hands right now.
I even
splurged for the spiral bound notebook.
There you go, man.
There you go. I got to have this all year round. Chris, it's been a pleasure and an honor. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Bottom
Thank
Line.
Thank you. I enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
And that does it for this special college basketball edition of the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. Make sure if you like what you heard, follow us, follow this podcast, and follow us on Twitter at Bottom Line Lex. We thank Chris Dortch again for joining us, and until the next time, as always, may the winners be yours.
Listen, good luck. Cash and tickets is what it's all about. So long, everybody.